Chris Carter here in the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. We're going to talk with Brian Badko about a topic we don't really touch on that much with the Steelers, and that's special teams. What's new? What are they going to do with the new kickoff rule, Cordarrelle Patterson, the new punter they have, as well as some of the moves they've made this week? That, and we'll get some Pirates talk here on the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette North Shore Drive podcast. Let's get into it.
You are now listening to the North Shore Drive podcast, a show on all things Pittsburgh sports from the writers of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, hosted by Christopher Carter.
Hello and welcome to the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I'm your host, Chris Carter. He's Brian Badko, one of our great Steelers beat writers. And as always, you can find this show on your favorite podcasting apps and on YouTube. Like this video if you enjoy it. Subscribe to this channel to get all of the daily content that comes out from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, as well as the Monday, Wednesday, Friday episodes of the North Shore Drive podcast. And as always, this show is brought to you by the best bar in Pittsburgh, and that's Mike's Beer Bar. Whether you're going to Mike's Beer Bar just to enjoy the nice days out in summer on the North Shore, or you're going to enjoy one of their 500 different available beers. Remember, 300 of those beers are from the local Pittsburgh area, and 80 of those local beers are available on tap. There's a lot to like about Mike's Beer Bar. We'll get more into them later. Brian, we talk a lot about offense. We talk a lot about defense, but what about the special teams? That's something that we've been asked about a few times here, and I think we could dedicate an episode or at least a segment talking about the special teams unit here in Pittsburgh, and especially because with the new rule changes, there are going to be changes, and that's something we got to watch a little bit at practice, during OTAs and mini camp, was Danny Smith working on these new kickoff formations and the new challenges it's going to bring to both containing other teams on special teams and also creating for a guy that they signed in Cordarrelle Patterson.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a big offseason for Steelers special teams. Actually, this isn't like the previous years where they've simply run it back with Christian Kuntz, Chris Boswell, and Presley Harvin III, beyond just the seismic change across the NFL that all 32 franchises will have to deal with in terms of these new kickoff experiments. They've also got, like you said, a new return man in Cordarrelle Patterson, and they've got a new punter in Cameron Johnston taking over for Harvin after a few up and down, inconsistent, and then in the end, overall, just not strong enough seasons from the former seventh round draft pick. So, yeah, it probably is a good time to spend a little bit of a podcast on that third phase of the game. And I did think it was interesting to hear from Danny Smith last week during minicamp about, and I think, Danny's a straight shooter. He tells you when he doesn't like something, and he seems to really like the fact that kickoffs have been altered by the league and in theory are going to be back in play a lot more, to use his words. You can't just call a fair catch, take it at the 25 and say, we never have to worry about making the right decision or blocking anybody or finding the right hole. Now, with this setup zone and obviously the coverage team being about 25 yards in front of the kicker himself, mm-hmm. and just condensing essentially the entire operation, it's going to put the onus back on special teams coordinators and return men and blockers to figure out the best way to navigate this, which they've done in some other leagues, notably the XFL and CFL, but with some different different wrinkles and tweaks added in at the NFL level now, the way they're doing it.
Absolutely. I think that there's going to be a lot of things. I also think this is a sign of how Danny Smith is crazy. Like, he's just unstoppable. You can't.
This would have been the perfect time to be pull the old Danny Glover and be like, I'm getting too old for this.
Right. Exactly. Like, think about this dude's been coaching special teams for decades. He's in his 60s, right? Like, he's 70. Yes, this man is 70 years old.
He's been a coach in some capacity since 76.
That's insane. Like, yeah. The Steelers of the 70s was still playing when he became a coach. And like, this is a guy now who you're telling, hey, there's a huge structural change coming to how the game has been played for the last 50 plus years. Yep. And you're going to have to figure it out. And he's like, bring it on, buddy. Like, I thought for sure, I'm like, this is the year where Danny's going to be like, all right, you know what? I've had my fun. I'm going to just, nope. He's out there still chewing on his gum, still yelling at people, You know, and still being like, hey, get on this. And I mean, he's still serious about it. Like, I saw him challenging Ryan Watts during OTAs. Like, hey, I need you to get here. I need you to get there. And I'm just like, man, it further impresses me and also kind of disturbs me sometimes. I'm like, how intense is this guy at all times?
Yeah. And I mean, hey, that energy is not something he lacks, but you know, the strategy aspect, we're not really going to have a great feel for where the Steelers are on that until, and he said this himself. I mean, it's all well and good to watch film, you know, talk about it in meetings with your special teamers, put it into action on the practice field, but it's not really going to be displayed until the preseason games. Then everybody will get a dry run a few times, a fourth for the Hall of Fame game teams. Mm-hmm. And then even after that, another jump up to the regular season, because you got to figure whether it's Danny Smith or other special teams coaches out there, they're probably going to not show everything they have in mind in the preseason. If they've got any tricks for these new kickoff roles, might hold on to it, keep it up their sleeve until the regular season. And that's like a sort of a sneaky thing to week one, right? Like, you got to think between all 32 special teams coordinators and a bunch of teams, not the Steelers, but a bunch of teams have assistant special teams coaches. I think Matt Baker maybe handles some of those roles for the Steelers. He was a new assistant brought on this offseason who's worked with Arthur Smith. He also helps the quarterbacks. So they do have another set of eyes on that. But between all the teams, you've got to think someone's going to try to reinvent the wheel week one and catch somebody off guard with this new kickoff. And I also think it's interesting that while Danny Smith was so gung-ho about it and said he loves this challenge, he thinks it's going to be great for the game because it makes their jobs more significant again than they had been, and it's going to be key for field position. Cordero Patterson, the guy that's going to be on the receiving end of these kicks, you know, unless barring something drastic, he's got a love-hate relationship with it. He basically said one day he enjoys it, the next day he hates it. So probably because Danny Smith and company are making it tough on him in practice, busting out all sorts of different kicks, you know, sharp line drives, squibbers. And Patterson's, maybe he's the Danny Glover, like, I'm getting too old for this. Like, I've turned 9 kicks for touchdowns in my career. I'm one of the best to ever do it. What do I need this for? But, you know, clearly that's why the Steelers signed him. And clearly he has no choice but to adjust. And if he can't, then they'll find somebody else who is able to do it.
Absolutely. I want to talk more about other things about personnel on special teams, including the punter position and also other people who could be, you know, who could be really good returners. You know, there's a lot of speedsters on this team, including Calvin Austin, who people wonder, why wouldn't you put a guy like that on the field? We'll talk about that and more things here on the North Shore Drive podcast after this break here. But first, I want to remind you, this show is brought to you by Mike's Beer Bar, the best bar in Pittsburgh. When I say they're the best bar in Pittsburgh, I mean it. When you go to there, they have over 500 different available beers. 300 of those beers are for the local Pittsburgh area. And if you're a fan of beer, Pittsburgh is a great place for craft breweries. So you can, instead of traveling all across the county to see all the different area, all the different breweries here, which you still should do, you can go to Mike's Beer Bar and test taste all of them, because there's all the different styles of beers, all the different flavors, everything. And there's always new things coming in, including 80 new beers that are available on tap every single day with new ones switching in and out. Plus, they have amazing food like steak on a stone, where you get your choice cut of steak brought to you on a heated stone. Every time you cut a piece off, you press it into that stone and you choose how well done you want every single bite. And they always got new menu options. I just had a fried crab wrap and it was amazing. Go to Mike's Beer Bar today. It's the best bar out of Pittsburgh. When you get there, tell them Chris sent you. Back here in the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Chris Carter, Brian Batko. Brian, I want to get back to the returner talk here. What do you think that Cordero Patterson, you know, I mean, he, again, his experience is unchallenged. The only person who say they've done it better than him is Devin Hester, the greatest return man of all time. But is this creating a logjam for where the Steelers do have some speedsters on the team who could be good there, including Calvin Austin, who, by the way, we've also talked about having a good OTAs in minicamp for what he's been working on so far this year?
Yeah, that's my only level of skepticism with bringing in Patterson for this job. You know, number one, he was pretty pedestrian last year stats-wise. I'm not going to lie to you, Chris, and say I watched all of his returns with the Falcons in 2023. Because you can't just pull those up on Twitter or YouTube. You got to sit down, put on the All-22 tape and rewatch a full game. So I have not found the time to do that just yet, but I think he only averaged like 21.7 yards a return. It was only 2 years ago that he did take one back to the house for Atlanta in 2022. So I'm not trying to write the guy's obituary as a return man or anything like that, but he is getting up there in age. He's what, 32 now? Generally accepted wisdom that you lose a step the older that you get. And guys like Calvin Austin with 4.3 type speed, you know, that's partially what they were brought in to do as well. So maybe there will be some level of competition. It's interesting to me that Danny Smith said he has no idea who will be returning kicks for him, probably exaggerating on that and just doesn't want to show his cards. But when Mike Tomlin was asked about these new kickoff changes, his only response was, "I'm just glad we have Cordarrelle Patterson. That's about all I can see right now." So he must think that that's one fewer thing he has to worry about, is having an experienced guy back there who's done it hundreds of times in his NFL career and college career. So, but yeah, I mean, if he doesn't really have the juice anymore, or if, you know, I also thought, and he admitted this himself, Patterson did, that he's not in the best of shape right now. So, you know, what he was able to do in the spring, maybe there will be another level he finds next month in training camp. But I thought, I mean, he's listed at 6'2", 230, I think. I mean, he looked like a tight end when we saw him here. And he basically, I think he said he lets his body get fat and unhealthy.
Yep.
In the offseason. You can watch that video on our YouTube page if you haven't seen it. And that he'll basically get in shape in time for training camp. And he'll continue to get to a 10 out of 10 throughout training camp. And that's not really difficult to do when you're sweating it out at St. Vincent College in Latrobe, and you're practicing and walkthroughs and, you know, the grind of that. So maybe he will, but yeah, I mean, he's somebody who's done it at a high level for a long time, but you also kind of throw out some of that experience, because it is going to change for everybody now with the way this looks with the new roles.
Absolutely. I want to talk about the punting position now.
Yeah.
Presley Harvin was a guy who the Steelers gave every chance to figure things out. And he went through some hardships. You know, he lost close members of his family in the middle of seasons. He was, you know, struggling with things. But
the Boo Birds, I mean, the fans certainly did not take it easy on him.
They did not. But at the same time, when you average 42, 44, and 43 yards per punt over three years, he ended up averaging 43.7 in his time with the Steelers. That's not going to get it done, especially when you were a seventh-round draft pick as a punter. And when you're a lot of fans would say
he got too many chances from the
Steelers. And so they've moved on from him, and the Steelers went and got Cameron Johnston, who now comes to the Steelers, and he has a career record of being a solid veteran. He's not like a superstar, but throughout his career, he averages 47.3 yards per.
Are there any superstar punters, Chris?
In today's day and age,
I was gonna say back in the day, like Shane Leckler,
Andy Mitch Lee Berger, was a big crowd.
Yeah, Andy Lee,
H2P indeed. There have been guys, but like, I don't know about right now. You know, I got to go back and look at kind of like, you know, but that's the thing. That's why I think another reason why it was such disappointment with Presley Harvin. Like, I watched that guy in college, and he looked like he could be one of those superstar punters. Just the way that he boomed the ball, won the Ray Guy Award. But I think that one thing that Johnston brings here is he's going to bring consistency. Like, again, you look at Presley Harvin's years, his best year in yards per punt was 44 and a half yards. That is beneath the worst year that Cameron Johnston has ever had. And I think that's what the Steelers need here in the punting. It's not that this is going to by itself win them games, but these averages that are higher, you're going to see a higher level of consistency, less shanks, and that means less times where the defense is going to have its back up against the wall the way it did more than a few times with the Steelers and Presley Harvin over the years.
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned Danny Smith being a straight shooter in the first segment, and he did say when the topic of Johnston came up that he thinks you're going to see a big improvement in that area. So read between the lines, pretty much telling you this guy's an upgrade over Presley. And, you know, it's for Johnston. I mean, he was like a top five or six punter in most of the, you know, significant metrics for that position last season with the Texans. That's why the Steelers are paying him right about that rate, $9 million over 3 years. Mike Tomlin at owners meetings in March called him the bell of the ball at his position in free agency. Yeah, that's the fun. Like, Mike Tomlin absolutely loves punting as well. Like, that guy is such a football junkie that...
Not as much as Pat Narduzzi.
Okay, maybe not as much as the other coach that you're around a lot, Chris. But I shouldn't say Tomlin loves punting. He loves coaching it and watching it at practice and challenging those guys just as he would a linebacker or a quarterback. So if you're ever at at training camp, you can't see it quite as much. But when you're in those more intimate Southside settings with us, you see how much he gets on the punters in special teams, period. So he's clearly dialed in to that, and that's why the Steelers did go out and get Johnston. What I thought was interesting, though, and I asked Johnston about this last week, you know, the Steelers obviously practice 10, 15 minutes from where they play. So he hasn't had a chance yet to get down to Acrisure Stadium. And, I mean, he's punted there in the past in games when he's with other teams. But it is going to be a little different going from the friendly confines of NRG Stadium in Houston, a dome. His numbers have gotten better and better the last 3 years, but he went from punting in Philly, where the elements are going to be different, than punting in Houston half the games. And, you know, even more than that, when you look at playing in the AFC South as opposed to the NFC East. So, you know, that'll be an interesting adjustment for him as well. But Danny Smith said this guy is a pro's pro. He's got it. And he said he's not just a strong leg, but he's got a lot of game, is what Danny said, meaning he can, you know, do different things with the ball, special teams aspects that we would not comprehend from the outside. So I don't know that Harvin necessarily had that. I think they tried to work with him on some of those finer points of punting in the NFL. But that goes back to what you were getting at, Chris, that, you know, you assume anybody who does it at the college level, it'll simply translate to the pro level because you just get ball, see ball, kick ball as far as you can, and that's the job. But no, it's more nuanced than that. Danny Smith could go on and on and on about all the numbers at his disposal. So, you know, hang time, directional stuff, that's what they hope they're getting out of Johnston. And as long as he can catch that snap from Christian Kuntz, put the ball down, get it where Chris Boswell needs it to be, shouldn't be any issue with him as a holder either.
Moving on from special teams, I wanted to address some personnel moves with
housekeeping.
Some housekeeping here.
The Steelers traded for Brandon Ayuk.
Jeez, well, look what you're trying to do to us. Look what you're trying to do to us. But let's talk about the two moves that were made. And the reason why we're not putting this at the top of the show, the practice squad guys, even though, you know, there was, you know, potential there. Denzel Mims, wide receiver, who they picked up, you know, for the practice squad, he's been waived, as well as Trenton Thompson, who, if you all remember, did play a significant snaps last season when the Steelers were really hurting at safety, also intercepted, made a key interception in the first Bengals game that helped flip the game around for the Steelers. Both have been waived here. Brian, what do these, if anything, tell you about what the Steelers are doing? And I think that, you know, wide receiver is a position they're still trying to figure out if he's being let go while they're still, Mims is being let go while they're still trying to figure out this entire depth chart with a whole bunch of random guys that they've brought in. I think that's not a great sign for him. And Trenton Thompson, I thought that he would be one of the guys that they would keep around considering how much experience he had with them last year.
Yeah, I mean, starting with Mims, I thought he was one of those random guys who had a chance to maybe stick and make the team. But I think that wide receiver 4 or 5, you've got to be able to play some special teams. And I don't know that he's ever really had that, in his arsenal at the NFL level. So maybe his time just kind of ran out. You know, he was on the practice squad for most of last season. I thought he made plays at times in practice, last year and even this spring. But, you know, he was a kind of a bust, second round bust for the Jets in that 2020 draft, along with Chase Claypool and Brandon Ayuk, were a couple other, and Van Jefferson was also coming out of college that year. So the Steelers are leaving no stone unturned from the COVID draft, if you will. But yeah, that's it, I guess, for Denzel Mims and Trenton Thompson. Yeah, that one was kind of a head scratcher because there are some, less accomplished safeties on the roster, like Nate Maders and Jalen Elliott, who you'd think would have been the first on the chopping block. But yeah, maybe Thompson's another guy who wasn't really cutting it for them on special teams, or, you know, this, like I tweeted too, could potentially be encouraging sign for Ryan Watts, the rookie sixth rounder out of Texas, who they're trying to teach the safety position. I just wrote about that on, I guess it was Tuesday, both him and undrafted free agent Beanie Bishop transitioning to some different roles. So yeah, maybe they think Watts, if they keep a fifth safety beyond the Minkah Fitzpatrick, Deshaun Elliott, DeMonte Casey, Miles Killebrew, if they want another one, because we know Killebrew really doesn't factor into the defense all that often beyond his special teams work. Maybe Watts can be that guy, because in my initial roster projection, I think I had Trenton Thompson making the team. So look at that. I'm already wrong. But yeah, the Steelers creating some roster space for whatever reason doesn't necessarily mean they're about to swing a huge trade. They could. I'm not going to rule it out, but they also might just grab somebody off one of the UFL rosters now that that season is over.
They could also bring both of these guys back at some point.
Like, or they could do that. Yeah. Or they just want a couple spots open right now in the offseason for whatever reason.
Absolutely. There's a lot of different things we'll keep an eye on here at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Brian, thanks so much for joining me here. We switch to talk about baseball in the next segment. But first, before we get into any of that, I want to remind you this show is also sponsored by our friends at Moon Township Honda, where you can go to 5802 University Boulevard for Moon Township in Moon Township, Pennsylvania, or visit their website, moonhonda.com. Here's a message from our friends at Moon Township Honda.
To build the Honda CR-V hybrid, we took everything you love about the CR-V and kicked it up a notch with greater power for a CR-V unlike any before. Adventure confidently with Honda, Car and Driver's most awarded brand in 10 best history, the CR-V and CR-V Hybrid, part of the Honda line of rugged vehicles. Visit your local Honda dealer for new vehicles or arriving daily. Buy online or reserve from select Honda dealers.
We're back here on the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I'm your host, Chris Carter. We switched to Jason Mackey, one of our amazing columnists here at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And Jason, ton of experience covering the Pirates, has a lot of great thoughts around the team. And I want to talk to you, Jason, about what the Pirates could need to do at the trade deadline and who some of their top targets need to be to fix this roster right now. We've seen the potential of this team. They've been up and down all season, but with this pitching rotation, with some of the players that have been able to play well this year, there's some optimism there. Who are some of the people that you're looking at in Major League Baseball that would make the most sense to target in the trade situation?
This is going to be the world's unsexiest answer, Chris, but I don't think we know yet. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be a buzzkill. We will talk through some names. We certainly will. I'm not going to be that guy. But my experience covering the Pirates has told me that a lot of times stuff posited on the outside, it doesn't necessarily feel the same way on the inside. It's also June 21st, and this stuff, it's very early for this sort of thing. I can give you a type of player that they're looking for, and that's an outfield bat. It's still unclear what they're going to do at first base, which is fine. Rowdy Tellez has come on in June. If he becomes that power bat that they want there and they can platoon him with Connor Joe, great. But they're at least a bat short. I think they're aware of it. And you want bullpen depth. And so teams right now who, you know, are clearly out of it and might be selling off assets. I mean, I can look at the Oakland A's, TJ McFarland, Scott Alexander. The Rays coming in here this weekend, they have some guys, Pete Fairbanks, Jason Adam, or two that I like a lot that I think would make some sense. Tanner Scott from the Miami Marlins. Again, just looking at teams that they're not going anywhere. You know they're probably going to trade things. And the Rays, I question whether they are. Ty Block from the Colorado Rockies is another reliever that I think would really help them. He's kind of a tweener guy. Anyway, that's a big, long sermon to say that I think we still just need a little bit more time.
No, I feel you. And like, I do this with the Steelers all the time. People say like, they need to make a move right now. And I'm like, guys, there's time. They need to figure things out, you know, and granted, these are different parts of the season. The Steelers in the off season, they have training camp, but the Pirates right now, they're still figuring out who's stepping up and who's figuring out. They brought guys up for the minors. They sent guys down to the minors. They're still judging how that's going to play out. And I imagine that's got to impact a lot of these decisions too, is that like, you know, what if someone emerges in certain positions and that changes your whole outlook when you get to the trade deadline. How much, you know, we're talking a lot about bats. How much of, as far as like getting a middle reliever to help this bullpen out a bit more? Because I think we've seen Bednar, Chapman, they've been able to come back around and deliver some really good performances, but there's still questions about who's going to help get them there when the starting rotation doesn't get them to the seventh inning or so. Is that a big target that you think the Pirates should be looking at too?
Yeah, I think, and that's why I try to zoom out with this stuff. Like if you look at the organizational pitching depth right now, the Pirates need work. They do. Mm-hmm. And it's not saying they're terrible. It's just like you would like to see more pitching depth than they currently have. So that's, yes, to answer your question, Chris, that yeah, that is an area that makes a lot of sense. I think what concerns me is if you have Bednar, Chapman, Holderman, and they have usage patterns that they like for them. I know fans sometimes disagree. It's also consistent with how things are done in Major League Baseball these days, that guys aren't going to throw 3 days in a row and there are these limits put on. Okay, fine. Operate within that. And if Bednar, Chapman, Holderman are down, we've seen in recent history them run out of pitchers. Like, you need another guy who's experienced at the back end. Ryan Borucki was that for them last year. Even Carmen Majenski. And Carmen Majenski has been better. Ryan Borucki is going to be coming back soon. So, I mean, that's why I want to see what he has there, if he's healthy. It's been a triceps thing with him. It's been really like a nerve issue and weird to diagnose. Anyway, I can look at their pitching depth and say that they need more. That's a fair question, but I want to see, you know, what does Borucki have? What does Martin Perez have? What does Quinn Priester have? There's currently not a lot in the minor leagues I can go down and get, but and I guess the other point I want to make, Chris, too, it slipped my mind earlier, but I mean, the trade deadline is a good time to add these sort of smaller relief pieces. Like, that's a pretty easy deal to get done.
Yeah, that's why I think this could be part of the puzzle. I know a lot of people are talking about bats because of the Pirates' lack of offense in a lot of games this year.
Also fair. I'm not downplaying that.
Right. No. Completely reasonable. Those were a lot of your top targets, and I think that is what this team needs. I got to ask, too, how much of how successful this team is over the next few weeks impacts this decision of how hard they go in at the trade deadline? Because, like, at the same time, you know, I've talked about it with you, Andrew, Noah. Like, there's the window for this organization might be it's the next 2 to 3 years itself, and if you're selling, if you're trading, you're giving away assets that might be pieces that you were thinking could be part of those 2 to 3 years. What's the kind of like the gauge that you have for like how hard they go this season to try to make a push to make the playoffs? Because right now they're in that like 18 thick group of that are just hovering around that wild card spot.
Yeah. So here's where the Pirates operate with that stuff. And like, I don't think saying 2 to 3 year window is how they look at it. Okay. I think you need to, and again, this probably falls into the unsexy answer category, but they're looking at deals that make them better now and in the future. And what that means in realistic terms is a guy that is not a rental, somebody they can get for multiple years. And can that guy be attained for something reasonable? Now, if they have, and all of these things are measured independently. So I'm trying to give answers that cover all of it, but if they have a guy that's really going to impact them this year and for multiple seasons, then they're willing to really give up something of value. If it's going to be a rental, somebody that just scratches this short term, we need a little bit more pitching depth thing, then they're probably going to make a different kind of deal. That deal would include something like what they did last year with Carlos Santana. They traded Carlos Santana, a rental veteran, for a guy named Johnny Severino, who was a younger, high upside prospect in the Dominican Republic. The Pirates have those guys. They have accumulated those prospects. So if you want to make that deal, that is there. How seriously they go with something else, maybe a Bubba Chandler, a Tamar Johnson, guys at the top of the heap. I mean, that just depends on what's out there and what other teams are willing to do. So I feel like I'm giving a roundabout answer, and maybe I am, but that's the calculus that goes into it.
This is speculation at this point. We don't have any sources that are saying trades are about to happen right now or anything like that. But I want to give Pirates fans the perspective of how things are. And you went right. You segued right into my next question, which was, who are the prospects that you think are most likely to, like if you were to name lighter prospects to give up on or lighter players that they could send out for those smaller trades, maybe for like one of those middle relievers that wouldn't cost as much, or some of those more significant prospects that fans have been hearing about that they'd have to give up to get one of those serious bats that could help them right now and for the next few years?
Yeah, I look at guys, Chris, who are, one, I tend to skew toward position players with stuff like this. I'm so hesitant to give up young pitching. I just think it's so important, especially for a team like the Pirates, where you're not going to purchase pitching on the open market. You need to grow it yourself. Position players who don't have a clear place or path forward. Leover Peguero is a guy who falls into that category for me. Pirates fans should know him well. Middle infielder. Right now, Nick Gonzalez theoretically has taken hold of second base, so Neil Cruz is going to play shortstop. I don't know where Peguero fits. So, I mean, he's somebody. G1 Bay, is somebody else. He has some skills. He's done some things in the past, but the Pirates probably don't have the runway to give him that he would otherwise need. But if you look at, you know, go through their minor league system, it's going to take a lot for me to give up on Bubba Chandler, Thomas Harrington, Braxton Ashcraft, guys like that. But if I look at Mitch Jebb, college kid from last year, they took Sung Chi Chang. He's in AA Altoona and has shown some good things. Like, those are highly regarded top 10 prospects that I don't necessarily see a place for with the organization at the time. So, I mean, even a Lonnie White Jr., maybe. But, you know, I'm not giving up on Xander Muth, Hunter Barco, Michael Kennedy, if I can avoid it. Now, for the right deal, sure. I think their list of untouchables should be very short, and I'm never going to create a scenario where I'm saying I'm not going to talk about a player. I'm just more hesitant to give up young pitching than I am position players.
I hear you there. You can read all about all of this by our great team at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette by going to post-gazette.com. Subscribe to the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette to get the work of Jason, Noah, Andrew as they continue to cover the Pirates and their push to make the playoffs this season. Jason, thanks so much for joining us here on the North Shore Drive Podcast. Thank you all for joining us here in the North Shore Drive Podcast. Remember, you can watch this show or listen to the show on your favorite podcasting app or on YouTube. Like this show if you enjoy it. Subscribe to this channel to get all of our Monday, Wednesday, Friday episodes of the North Shore Drive Podcast, as well as the daily content that comes out from all of our Pittsburgh sports writers, including Jason Mackey. We're back here Monday here on the North Shore Drive Podcast. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the North Shore Drive Podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all the sports coverage from the Post-Gazette that we have to offer, visit post-gazette.com.